Hello, everyone, and welcome to Nine Lives AMA, a special bonus episode, number one, with my dear friend, the producer of this podcast, the reason why Nine Lives exists, and marathon runner aficionado, Rihanna Coleman, everyone.
Hello. Welcome.
Round of applause.
This is so weird.
Thank you for coming on. I know Rihanna is always, she's behind the scenes, editing, producing, doing all the social bits. So yeah,
here I am.
Here you are. Welcome. This is podcasting. How do you feel?
I feel good. It's so nice to be this side of the mic for once.
Yeah.
And also, I'm so excited to talk about the marathon.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like it's become my entire personality for the past 6 months.
Yeah. So. It kind of just does, really. So to set the scene, Rihanna and I met because Rihanna slid in my DMs. About a year and a half ago or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went for coffee. Then I came in and did this. Then it kind of just blew up. And now we are best friends.
It was a mutual sharing of our personal loves. Cassie introduced me to running.
Yeah.
I introduced her to podcasting.
Yeah. And it all
the baby was born.
It happened. So about 6 months ago, I believe, when I was training for my ultra marathon, I leaned over the kitchen there at Spotify and I said, Rihanna, should we run Paris Marathon? And at that point, you were running 5Ks?
5Ks. I think I had just run 10K.
Yeah.
And found it hard.
Yeah.
So when you asked me, I don't know why I agreed. Because I was in the thick of, this is really difficult.
Mm.
But I knew I needed a goal.
Mm. So what was it? What was it in your brain that made you said yes? Because a lot of people, we did a little question box on Instagram, but a lot of people are asking, like, what was the decision? How did you make that decision?
I think having a goal and a purpose to why you're doing any form of fitness is so important for accountability.
Mm.
And we'd already been training a little bit together.
Yeah.
And I felt as though with running, everything felt really difficult.
Mm.
And without having an end goal in mind and a why, each training session was just not getting any easier. It didn't feel like my progress was amounting to anything. So, and also, I think sometimes when someone presents an opportunity to you, I never would have entered myself for a marathon. And you very kindly said to me, I have a spare space that I'm able to give you. And for me, that was take the opportunity that is presented to you right there and then. And I'm really grateful for that because I think so many people do think, I'm going to sign myself up. And then they get into the training block and they go through all the struggles. But I wasn't even there.
Mm.
I actually needed a little bit of a push.
Mm. I think a lot of people don't realize what they're capable of until someone kind of pushes them into it.
Exactly.
So it does help to have a coach and people around you who are supporting you. And I think your positioning like isn't the most normal when coming into a race prep or a race because you've literally had me on your literally on your heels and we did a lot of long runs together and you had the help of Finn as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact, I mean, I'm going to embarrass you, the fact that you started this journey not being a runner and have run the Paris Marathon in 4 hours...
18.
Rihanna is absolutely nothing short of extraordinary.
Thanks,
Mary. It's incredible what you've done. I think you're going to be so inspiring for so many people because it's all well and good me sitting here and waxing lyrical about meeting God during an ultra, you know, but to actually have the proof of like someone who started pretty much at the beginning of their journey
mm-hmm.
and have gone through and run a marathon is really, really extraordinary.
Yeah, thank you. But I also feel that there's some what feels quite unique to my circumstance was I knew what I was good at in life. I enjoyed my work. I had good friends. I socialized a lot.
Mm.
But I didn't have anything in my life that really served me as an adult specifically. I was hanging on to a ton of negative, limiting beliefs. I remember being at the London Marathon last year as a supporter, and my friend turned to me and she said, would you ever do this? And we laughed. And I was
really?
Like, absolutely not. Are you joking? And then when you asked me, I just thought, how cool that a year ago, well, actually, at that point, it would have been a matter of months ago, it was out of the question for me. And then when you asked me, I'd done a 5K or a 10K. But I think, and this is something you said in a previous episode, there was just a moment of like, why not me? Why not me? And to be honest, I think proving yourself wrong can be so rewarding. So much of what we do is, I want to prove them wrong. I want revenge on an ex-boyfriend. I want whatever it is. But looking back and proving yourself wrong and being like, God, you were just living with all these made up narratives in your mind is so rewarding.
Yeah.
It's so satisfying.
So powerful. And I think the race block, and like, because obviously we were doing the same training block, basically, I think it taught you an awful lot about life outside of running as well.
Yes.
About consistency and applied pressure and sticking to your goals and sticking to your guns and doing really, like, really hard things that feel like shit.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the reward of that as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, the first time we ran a half marathon, we were scheduled for a 10K that day. And it was the New York Marathon,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that day. So Rihanna arrived at my house and I said, sorry, we're running a half because we're pouring one out for New York Marathon. I would never have forced you to do that if I didn't think you were capable, and you were capable. And we did it, and it was pretty painful. I think you'd been on the Baby Guinness the night before at a wedding.
Yeah, I was hungover thinking I was just going to 10K on a Sunday. But also to your point that... You totally believe that I'd be able to do that. Obviously, mm-hmm. you weren't going to throw me into something that was
dangerous.
I was going to injure myself or anything that was dangerous. But yeah, that first half marathon was a real turning point for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think getting over 5 and 10, and even we were speaking to someone the other day about this, about how as a beginner, 5 to 10K is the hardest hurdle.
Yep.
Once you're over 10 and you've done a few comfortable 10s, genuinely, the half feels really achievable. It's painful, the first one.
Mm.
And I literally remember physically feeling all kinds of way. Do you remember? I came straight off. I was like, I feel like I'm running on a treadmill. Mm-hmm. I feel like I can't stop. I had pins and needles. It was wild.
Mm.
And then... you did all the right things, gave me electrolytes. We ate something massive afterwards. And then it's just another big hurdle mm-hmm. in the bank onto the next.
Mm-hmm.
But that 5 to 10,
those are the
that
hard.
Was so much harder than
yeah.
than getting to a half from 10.
The longer distances become sort of inconsequential after a while. That's just a mindset thing, because mm-hmm. your body gets to a point where you become a runner. And I think a lot of people don't really realize that you can get lost in the technicalities of like gels, electrolytes, shoes, and that all that's really fun, have the sunglasses, but really what it comes down to is time on legs and just running and running and running until you become, your aerobic base is sorted, your body is used to running, you're adapted to the constant pressure. Then sort of I find, especially with clients, that past half marathon stuff gets easier. It does just get easier. Is a marathon easy? No, it's always hideous in the best way possible. But you then ran a 30K, you know, that probably didn't feel much different to your half, right?
Yeah, it didn't.
It's, you know, it's those distances start to get easier.
I think what's also interesting about that, it gets easier, is I remember people saying that to me and I was like, how though? Like, how does it get easier? But how it gets easier is experience, knowledge, the amount that I've learned on this training block. We were talking about this the other day. It gets easier because you learn how to cope with the different sections of the run, and you learn how to understand, you know, what's happening to you. You keep an eye on your heart rate. You just feel more in control of the whole thing rather than going with the wind and hoping you get 21.
And you probably feel much more connected to yourself, right?
Right.
Because you're, and this is why I really enjoy running and having my body sort of like a little machine that I know what's going on with it all the time. And I think, like you say, those longer runs or like 10Ks, half marathons break down into sections of like, this sucks, I know it'll pass though. And then getting past that hurdle and then getting to like 18 and it feels great again, and looking at your heart rate and knowing that you need to eat, is all things that, you know, it's just practice.
Totally.
And it's just learning it. And I think what's so cool about your running story is that it kind of shows that anyone can do it. Like your I would say previous lifestyle was very balanced and you are a healthy human being, but there was nights out and client lunches and things that you know, would you say you had to sacrifice or swap, or was there anything that changed that you ever felt like your lifestyle, you know, you had to give up anything to do this?
For sure. I think assuming that you can have it all and do it all to a really high standard is risky because, and I think we're quite similar in the sense of, I would like to think that I'm a high performer. I like to do things and do them well. And you can be a great social friend, you can be a great runner. If you have a weekend where you want to do 12K on the Sunday, you want to do half marathon on the Sunday, but you've got a wedding to go to the night before, it's going to suck a bit more. And then I found myself getting more and more frustrated that I wasn't seeing the progress, and then immediately reflecting on how I sabotaged myself the day before. So yes, I had to give up the volume of booze that I was drinking, and also just see that as a lesson of, this isn't permanent. This is just, I want to get to this goal in the next 3-6 months. And in order to do that, something's got to give. But also, I started to get really into the feeling of waking up being gassed to get out on a run. If it was blue skies and I didn't have a whiff of a hangover, and I was like, cool, let's go. It all felt so, like, life felt so much easier. Yeah. So yes, I definitely had to give certain things up. I also think routine was just so, so important for me. I had some life changes halfway through my training block that meant that loads of routine fell away, and I had to create that routine. And specifically as I was going through the training block and the runs got longer, or the interval sessions got harder, the sacrifices went from being, okay, you've got to say no to a few more nights out, like those things I kind of nailed quite early on. And the compromise actually came more around sleep hygiene. You're not going to do a 24K successfully if you've had 4 hours sleep and you're up till 2 a.m. scrolling on your phone. That was a really big one for me, scrolling, having a really busy brain, not being rested enough. Girl dinners, like, have a proper meal the night before.
Look after yourself.
Totally.
That's basically all it is. Mm. And like, I think a lot of people, why they enjoy running so much and what they really learn is how to look after themselves.
Yeah.
Which is sort of sad in a way that it takes getting into running or a race block that you start to sleep, eat and talk to yourself better.
Mm.
But this is why I think running is such a lovely thing for everyone to get into, because it does teach you so much about caring for yourself and managing to do really, really hard, difficult things that you didn't think you could do a year ago.
Completely.
I love that London Marathon story. I cannot believe that. So we're going to dive into a few questions from the community now. There's been so many, so I don't think we'll be able to do them all, but I've picked some favorites. Joanna asks, quite a sweet one, fondest memory of your preparation for the race?
Fondest memory. The first 30K that I did it on my own. I will say that running with people was a real joy of the training block, but some of the most rewarding parts of the training block were when I did it on my own. I lived in North London at the time, so I ran down to Battersea Park, around Battersea Park, and then back. And I had sat down the day before and been like, how am I going to make sure that this is such a good performance for me? So I ate really well. I got the food for the run sorted. I got excited about like packing all my snacks. I hydrated like hell the day before. I really tried to like tick all of the boxes. And then I knew that I was as prepared as I possibly could be. And as I was on this run, it was just such a rewarding feeling to be like, I've done all of this for myself. Mm-hmm. I've set myself up for success here. And there's only one outcome of this, and it's going to be that it's great. Like, it was so fond for me because I felt comfortable.
Yeah.
I felt prepared. I felt like I backed myself.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was just really awesome.
Yeah. I think unlocking that idea that any day, any given 3 hours could be a 30K
right.
is like such a treat for me, especially because I just know that in the back of my mind, like, I could just do a half marathon if I wanted, you know, and that self, what's it called? Like when you push yourself to do something and no one else is like doing it for you. Self-motivated, self, whatever. That ability to push yourself to, like, it's mental that you have never run 30K and you went and ran 30K on your own. But hell, man, that means you can do a lot of hard things in your life that no one else is pushing you to do. You're just going to go and do it yourself.
Totally. And a lot of it was the permission thing. Like, I think what a lot of people do, and what I do a lot as well, is if you feel like, I want to do this thing, I don't know how to get there, the immediate response was to ask, how do I get there? What do I do? Should I do this or this? Rather than just taking a beat, applying some critical thinking and thinking, okay, with the knowledge that I do have, how can I best set myself up? And then where are their blank spaces and who can help me fill them? And I think when you're approaching something that's brand new, you feel like you need a step-by-step handheld guide to take you through all of it. And that run in particular was, you've got this. When I got to the start line of the marathon and you and Finn were like, the hard work is done, trust yourself. That you kind of have to apply that throughout the training block. You've got yourself. And then it's so nice that you might have a coach or you might have people online that you can go to fill some blanks. But actually just proving back yourself. To yourself. You can, back yourself.
Yeah, definitely. So actually ties in really nice to the next question. But someone asks, how do you get over race day nerves as a first-time racer or someone who hasn't been in a race before? Because I think a lot of people who follow me and listen aren't necessarily marathon runners. Mm-hmm. They are more beginner runners who are thinking about signing up for a 10K or a half marathon. And I would say to my experience, I'm probably not the best person to ask because the first official race I ever did will be a year ago on Sunday and was the London Marathon. And I found to be incredibly overwhelming and I didn't train properly. And I should have done things differently. So I was incredibly nervous and remained nervous throughout. But Rihanna, how was your dealing with race day nerves and how it all feels as a complete beginner who is newly identifying as a runner?
Race day nerves the week before, it was really difficult. It's fear of the unknown. But it's not in your control. I think I just kept reminding myself, this is a brand new environment. How could I possibly mitigate how I'm going to feel, what I can control is how I'm going to perform. I've just put in 16 weeks worth of work.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know if this is a good answer, but like on other nerves, I was mute the morning before of the marathon, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were.
We walked to the start line.
In silence.
In silence. I was so overwhelmed by the thought of it. And Cass was just being like, it's just a run. It's just a run. It's just another training run. It's going to be great. It's going to be fun. And it was such a strange feeling because I kept telling myself, you can walk at any point.
Yep.
You can take a little break. You can stop if you really want for a little bit.
Yeah. Can sit down.
You can sit down. You can slow down. There are so many options available to you right now. And also, I think just reminding myself of all the work that I have done to get myself to this point, that was what calmed my nerves the most. And again, trust in yourself. Sometimes, like, there were points in that race, and there had been points in longer runs where my body just did the work. You just go into a state of flow and your body just does the work for you. And I just had to trust, like, that's just going to happen.
Yeah.
The first 6 kilometers are going to be shit. They're going to be awful. Hard.
And overwhelming.
Totally. So I think that, and then also just let the nerves happen. Try not to let them get the best of you.
Breathe, it's excitement.
Stuff. It's excitement.
Let it be excitement over fear.
Yeah.
Because also I think people somehow, and I used to do this a lot on race day, imagine that somehow it's different running.
Yeah.
It's the same running that you've done, just a wee bit further, and there are people there, and it's easier because the crowds carry you.
Big time.
You know. But I will say, to your race experience, you came out and kept pace with me and Finn for 15 kilometers and we didn't have the heart to tell you to go away.
I like my friends.
So you did go out really fast.
Yeah. I think the
which was not the plan. But how can I look at sweet Rihanna and be like, go away, don't run with us?
The audacity of me at one point to be like, guys, by the way, don't let me hold you back. Like, if you need to go faster, like, go faster. That's grand.
Me and Finn are like on our pacing plan being like, all right, Rihanna, we'll
gasping prayer. Yeah. But no, that first 15, I also felt like I needed something. And it, whether you're doing a marathon alone, obviously you're not alone, but if you're not starting with a friend, then you kind of have to do whatever is just going to make you feel comfy. And for me, doing the first 5, 10, 15 k next to you and Finn, and again, I was mute, I barely spoke, just listening to you guys chat really calmed my nerves and helped me get through the adrenaline, because there are so many moments in a marathon that people don't talk about, that the beginning is overwhelming. There are parts in it when you actually feel a bit lonely and like the crowds thin out at random parts in the course and you've just got your brain going. And then again, at the end, it gets so overwhelming again. And I think had I not stuck with you guys at the beginning and just done what I felt really comfortable with, then I think the end would have been 10 times more like challenging and confronting. But yes, I went out quite fast. Whoops. I got to half marathon and definitely 20 to 25 was challenging. But again, I really trusted in the training that I had done and my brain was just saying, that was a fast 15 minute interval, wasn't it? 15K interval.
Yeah. And then you slowed down and I mean, I can't believe your time. You did incredible. Incredible. Absolutely amazing.
I definitely think around 30 to 34K was...
Pain cave.
So hard. So hard. Because also you really, you see so many people just gunning it and having the best time ever. You see so many people really struggling.
Lying down on the side of the road.
Yeah. Really confronting for me. Like, found that really challenging to witness. Like, it's not a very human thing to walk past someone struggling and just be like, anyway.
Very difficult.
And gosh, the self-talk that's going on was such a struggle.
Yeah. It's those interestingly, like, I think 30 to 34 were more of the lonely miles. And I'm really lucky, so I had Finn pacing me, but the ultra that I did, I was alone from marathon up to 51. And I can say that though that's the most difficult part of running races is when there's no crowd, there's no mate with you, you've run out of water and you're just feeling a bit sick. But the fact that you know the finish line is quite close, it does make it easier. So we've got some questions on nutrition. I did want to touch on this because I really wanted to make something clear, and this has become very clear to Rihanna as well throughout this training block, how important it is to eat enough as a woman when you are training for a marathon. I think so many people stall their progress and don't see themselves getting faster or running further because they're not eating enough. So marathon training block and bodybuilding recomposition or weight loss do not go hand in hand. You're training for a sport here, not so much like a lifestyle change. And although this has had incredible effects on you and your physicalness, you know, how did you find slash as a first time marathoner, do you have any tips for people coming into this with nutrition?
Definitely the eating enough part was a real mind bender, especially as women, you spend so much of your life reducing portions, watching what you like. There's so much fixation on reducing. And now I think it's really brilliant because there's tons of education out there around if you want these strength goals, aesthetic goals, endurance goals, you need to nourish your body properly. Amazing. But actually applying that is totally different. Yeah. And I was vegetarian, pescatarian, and just felt so tired still. And so I was adding, you know, protein powders and so on. And then I made the decision to start eating like organic chicken. And I just, it was another lesson to me that was stop being so rigid with yourself. In the same way that Finn says, run the kilometer you're in, deal with the life stage you're in right now. I like the fact that I have autonomy over my body. I make really great choices where I can. If I have this goal in mind and my body's telling me you're really tired and I'm not recovering enough to get my next training run in, then how can I tweak something to fix that in a way that feels comfortable with me and sits okay in my brain?
Yeah.
So nutrition-wise, getting enough protein in was such a challenge.
Yeah.
And then also I would regularly message you and say, I feel really inflamed, I feel really puffy, I feel really bloated, which generally meant I just didn't really want to eat that much.
Yeah.
But also knowing when to eat. After that first half marathon we did, we ate straight away. And then there were other long runs where I maybe waited a little bit longer and I felt terrible.
Awful.
And so even educating myself enough to be like, okay, how many carbs do I need straight after that? How much water do I need after that? It was such an education process for me.
It's a really, I think just from my journey, having obviously lost a lot of weight and then going into sport, not so much fitness, but like sport, big learning curve in like, you have to eat, by the way, you're going to eat more than your fiance does in a day, because you're doing 32 kilometer runs. The day that I ran 36 kilometers, I clocked like over 4,000 calories because I have to, because not only do I have to refuel, I also have to recover. And then I have to be good to go to train again in 2 days' time. And I think so many women stop themselves from making progress because they're obsessed with being in a deficit.
Yeah.
You cannot train for a marathon and be in a deficit. Also, it's not good for your body to be in a deficit for a long time. So I think it's picking your moments and deciding why you're doing a marathon or why you're signing up for a race. Like, marathon is, it's a big undertaking. It's a huge undertaking in so many different resources. And I think for a lot of people who are beginners, my advice would be to maybe sign up for a 10K. Because it's just less. It's less inflammation, it's less stress. But it also does mean that if you have other goals as a beginner in strength and weight loss, you can kind of do those alongside. But marathon running, ultra running, and running fast, you gotta eat, babies. And you gotta eat carbs and sugar. Like, you know, and this is why it's, and salt. This is why it's difficult, because there's a lot of conflicting information between nutrition for weight loss or wellness, whatever you want to call it, and nutrition for sport, and the two don't really overlap. So you need to have your salts, your sugars, your carbs, and getting over that hurdle of like, shit, I've lived my life this whole way trying to do this and now I have to do this. And it's, I think that's why I really like performance, because marathon running, I mean, I don't think I looked at my body in a way of progress. I mean, I didn't, because the only thing I did think was, fuck, I'm in flames and I'm not liking this.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
Definitely that. It was more about how my body felt as well. I knew when I felt weak, tired. I knew when I felt undernourished. And also, for anyone that's running London or any other marathons coming up, it's also having a plan. When you finish that race, for me anyway, I found it so overwhelming. I was so overstimulated and truly, and I really wasn't thinking for myself. I was so grateful that my boyfriend was there and he was like, eat this banana, eat this sandwich, like have a plan for afterwards. It's so important, because all you want to do is go into like hibernation mode.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh my God, I'm under so much stress. I've just been chugging like water for 4 hours.
Yeah.
I've also been eating tiny bits of like gels. You need someone to just give you food, get it down the hatch. You will not want to eat, but just get a banana and a sandwich, don't you?
Yeah. I think having a plan for afterwards is a really big thing. My tradition is to always have a dinner with my friends and family after, because mentally, when I'm in pain cave 36, whatever it is, I just know that, I just imagine myself sitting at dinner with my friends and family, and then I'm like, right, okay, we've got to get the medal, because who are you going to show it to at dinner? Come on.
Totally. And the best piece of advice that somebody gave me at your shakeout run, actually, was, she said to me, she'd run two marathons, and she said after her first marathon, she just sat down and that was, the day was done. And she felt awful the next day. And in her second marathon, she forced herself to go out for a 40-minute walk, or like a half an hour walk.
Yeah.
And she felt fine the next day. And us having a plan to go out, be moving that evening.
In high heels.
In heels. And like, I'm not going to lie, I physically felt okay the next day.
We recovered pretty well. The fatigue is what lasts.
Yes.
I'm still fatigued, you know, mentally. So that, don't underestimate that. That takes a wee while to go. But the physical side, depending on obviously your fitness levels, you should, I mean, if you've trained well, you should be able to recover pretty well. So a couple more questions here is quite a sweet one. I thought this was nice. What was the most surprising thing you learned during the process for both of you?
Can you think of one for you?
During the Paris block, I think the most surprising thing I learned was how unhealed a part of myself is needing to prove people wrong.
Big one.
Because like I run marathons and that's enough. And I had this, you know, this training block was like intense for me, and intense in, it started off as being in a good way of like exploring, like the first time I ran a 4:30 kilometer was like, holy, I can do this, dude. Mm. It's a whole different ball game if you're running 4:30 kilometers for 42 kilometers. And I think a lot of like what happened last year when my accounts blew up and I had a lot of eyes on me from runners who have been doing it for a long time and weren't necessarily so kind to me or this podcast, there was a part of me that was like, well, I have to prove them wrong. I'm going to run a sub-4 marathon, and then you can't make fun of my mascara or my outfits or tell me that I'm slow or that, you know, that I shouldn't have even been obese in the first place then if I didn't want to be a slow runner. Like all these comments just going around in my mind that don't come anymore because people, I have a nice community now, but I definitely think that was embedded somewhere deep down. And I think that I don't give a shit about a sub-4 marathon, but I thought other people did. Mm-hmm. And so I think the most surprising thing I learned was that there's a part of me that still needs to heal that kind of like revenge thing that's going on. Because we climb mountains not so others can see us, but so we can see the world, right? So practice what you preach.
Correct.
The medal is for us and not for anyone else.
That is true. And I feel like there's been a bit of a wake of that since the marathon as well. Yeah. That you are doing a really great job of
giving people a voice as well.
The most surprising thing I think that came out of the marathon for me was actually the irrelevance of the distance itself. Mm-hmm. We spoke about this the day after. I thought that 42.2 kilometers was gonna feel like this big milestone, and there was so much focus on the distance. And before doing the marathon, I'd done a lot of hiking with our friend Zana, and she really taught me about taking each kilometer, like being patient with distance. So distances actually didn't really overwhelm me, but for some reason I thought that running it would feel like this big badge of honor. And it's so true what people say, that the marathon is the training block, the race day is actually the celebration. But I think I was really surprised to learn that there was more to me committing to a marathon than just proving that my body could take me along a far distance. It was more realizing the why. It was like, as adults, we have so many responsibilities. We neglect being just like playful and curious. We have so many limiting beliefs that we drag from our teenagehood, from our 20s. And for me, I just thought, what a symbolic way to knock that on the head. It almost felt like I couldn't knock those things on the head without having something to attach it to.
Yeah.
I needed something to kind of feel like the journey. And also, to caveat all of this, yes, there was something somewhat self-serving about giving myself a goal that wasn't revolving around my career or money or keeping myself afloat as a human being, but also a responsibility to the cause. We were raising money for a charity.
Yeah.
That was so rewarding.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised at how that made me feel. Friends and families rallied to donate money for this great cause, and my only job was to run this distance.
Yeah.
And I think I was surprised at how the pride that gave me as well. Like, I had so much more of a role to play in this, yeah, rather than just being like, I'm running now.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, no, I've done this thing for a good cause. I feel better about myself for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think a lot of people learn and see and get into it and understand marathons when you realize how much it empowers people to make changes throughout the world. If you look at any of these crazy, like we've got Josh Pattinson, who ran marathons back to back, obviously hardest geezers, just run the length of Africa. He'll be at London on Sunday. They aren't doing it for themselves. They're doing that to move people to make a change in the world.
Yes.
So marathons move people. Yes, we're physically moving 42.2 kilometers, but you're moving the world to make change while you're doing that. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're so inspiring, because when you break it down, like, you're just going a bit fast for 42 kilometers. What does that mean? But throughout history, we've seen people have pilgrimages, and it's so inspiring to see that happen and how that inspires other people as well. So I think that's a lovely thing to have learned. So someone says, two parts, what kept you motivated throughout the training block, and how do you not give in to the fear? Because for me, I have a history of training now where I'm kind of old enough into this game where motivation has been replaced by just, this is my life and this is my discipline. And fear, I get a little bit of fear, but I know the distance and I know what I'm doing now. So how, as a beginner, did you kind of keep those things at bay?
Agree with you. Motivation, the motivation came from evidence that I felt good after doing these things. I have a really good friend who's a runner. She does ultras, and she runs pretty much every day for her brain.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this on a dog walk, and she was saying that she doesn't love every run, but she loves how she feels after the run. She can tackle the day after the run. Happy days. And so I think what kept me motivated was knowing that there was gratification at the end of it, and also really taking a beat to register the little wins along the way, however that shows up. Like, I think, yes, there's loads on social media at the moment, but if you want to post about it on social media, if you want, I got really fucking into Strava. Strava's like my little happy place. Bang a photo up, do a fun little description. Oh my god, it's so fun. People give you kudos. Three people give me kudos. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely bouncing off the walls. So motivation really came from feeling a part of something, feeling like I was making all these incremental little changes, and then after a month I'd be like, hey, look how far that's got me. It was, the motivation came from pretty much the times when I wasn't running, when I was actually like thinking and reflecting. And then how did you move past the fear?
Yeah, the fear. So I think what they mean by the fear is like fear of failure, basically, because that, I think that's quite a big one for a lot of people when it does come to longer distances or marathons or anything. I think a lot of people stop themselves from even starting because they're scared of failing.
I guess it's just like, just sit with that for a bit. Like, what does failure, what does that even, what does that look like for you? What does that feel like? Failing could be showing up to the marathon and being a DNF, like, do not finish. There was just no way after 16 weeks of training that my brain would entertain that. So I think it was trust that in every training session I was just getting closer and closer to the fear being gone, irrelevant. And also starting every single run with, I know the first 1 to 4 kilometers is going to be suck. Awful.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know that warm-ups exist. Yeah. And until you click into running as an automatic, I'm just running now and this is how I exist as a human. I actually find that 7K takes me to warm up for a long run, really. So the first mile always sucks and it always will. You have to sit with that.
You also just spoke in the Breaking Habits episode about replacing a habit. Mm-hmm. I also think replace the thought. So if you're out on that run and you're like, God, I've got a 10K scheduled and I'm fearful that I'm not going to get to 10. I'm going to get to, maybe I can't make it past 5. distract yourself, put on something else. I love seeing people tagging Nine Lives when they're like, oh, I just went out on my 6K and I've just been listening to Nine Lives. That time passes so quickly.
So quickly.
You enter your subconscious, you forget that you even had the fear. Mm. Just like, get it to the back of your brain rather than here.
At the front. Totally. So final question, I think, because I tried to kind of amalgamate them all into these sort of sections, but there's a lot of questions around, we're obviously both young professionals with busy careers, which means that, and I spoke very openly throughout the training block, that I've had to skip runs, change things around, you know, not do them. How have you found managing a busy life as a professional with having to skip runs, not feeling guilty, and like basically how has the experience of fitting it into a busy life been for you? Because it is possible, by the way.
It's totally possible.
Yeah.
Having a plan and putting it into your calendar as an appointment was the first really productive step.
I remember when I told you to do that.
It made such a difference. Yeah. Like, you wouldn't just like not turn up to coffee with a mate.
Yeah.
Which means if you have to skip it, you're going to make a mental note for yourself to reschedule it. Mm-hmm. Or you are going to speak to that friend and say, hey, I'm so sorry, I can't do coffee this week. Can we actually just skip it and start again next week? And it means that you kind of check in with yourself and be like, okay, run 2 out of 3, ain't going to happen. See you on Friday instead.
Yeah.
So I think just like have a bit of grace in that sense. But fitting it into a busy schedule, literally schedule it as something that is a priority to you.
Yeah.
Also, I think the other thing is make it work with your schedule. If you aren't a morning person, if 5 a.m., 6 a.m., 7 a.m. doesn't work for you and you prefer working out in the evening, do it in the evening.
Yeah.
It's so easy to just say that. As a woman, if you're then like, cool, I'm just going to go out on my run at 9 p.m. There's so many other things attached to that.
Yeah.
But find a way. Maybe it's a case that you don't like mornings, but you can actually really see a world in which you bang your trainers on and your leggings and you go out for a quick run at lunch. Make it work in your schedule.
Yeah.
There's no point in trying to make it fit into somebody else's.
It's a temporary sacrifice as well. You have to remember this. Like, we're talking about race blocks, not just being a casual runner. It's a temporary sacrifice for like a lifetime's worth of glory and memories of doing that marathon. So I think just realizing that what we did was pretty intense, and I had to say no to quite a lot of social things. I also had to say no to a lot of runs because of career stuff, but it's temporary and I'm back to normal now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, I don't know when I'll probably run at London Marathon. That's probably my next run. But you know, if you are just looking at it from like a casual runner's point of view, or someone who does enjoy just getting out there, you can do it once or twice a week. And I'm sure that's what you will continue to do now.
Yeah.
Now that we're out of this, because you will continue to run.
Totally.
Yeah.
And also there's some sessions I objectively liked less. I don't like intervals. I don't like hill sprints. I don't like those things. So if I was going to be missing any of them, those were always the first ones I was going to
really?
Be missing. 100%. Because I enjoyed long runs.
You like
it either
long runs.
Meant that we could chat, yeah. Or you get brain space to yourself. Easy runs are easy runs. But they were the hardest ones to get my head around. And I just made peace with that.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm still, as Finn says, time on legs.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still committing to it. It doesn't make me any less committed.
Yeah.
It just means like, I hate intervals. And if I'm on my period and I don't want to do intervals,
God.
I'm not going to fucking do intervals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's so funny how every runner has like things that they like and don't like. Mm. Like, I love intervals because I really like going really hard sprinting, and I really love hill repeats.
Mm-hmm.
Adore. Just because there's a few hills in my history of places I've been that I accidentally did hill repeats during my fitness journey. So I really like going uphill. And I mean, I love all kinds of runs, but your program was basically like you had your long runs, easy runs, intervals, and hill repeats they're not necessary, but I think Finn put them in there.
Yes.
So because they're hard and we like to do hard things, but you got to run slow and easy to be able to run fast and long.
Completely. And it's also worth saying that my first ever run that I did with you was a 3K. I absolutely pelted it around. My heart rate was through the roof. And you were like, okay, 101. This is, you need to rewind.
Mm.
Not every run needs to be or should be a PB.
No.
Like, get comfy with running comfy.
Easy runs. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that's so funny that you bring that up, because the final thing I wanted to talk about was the first run, because I think a lot of people who listen to this haven't been on the first run yet, and don't realize that, like, if I think about my first run, how do you even conceivably do that? Like, how do you run? It's awkward, it's strange, it's weird. You don't know what your pace is or what your heart rate is or what to do. Yours was 3K of basically just sprinting.
Gasping
for air, because you just didn't know how to control your body and pull yourself back into pacing. And I think my comment was like, whoa, mate.
quote, colour me impressed, but slow down.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, right, okay, we're doing intervals already on this journey. But it's so cool to see that through the process of learning about yourself and about what running is, and long distance running shouldn't be painful either. Mm-hmm. It is, like, this is why people get into it and like it, because it is, and I'm sure it took you a while to get there, but it is a flow state that, yes, you click into.
Definitely. And the way that I would think about it now, if I was going to go and tell myself, give myself any advice or mindset before I did my first run, it would be, don't let this be any different to a first time doing anything else. We've all been to a first day at a new job. We've all, like, as kids, had a first birthday party of your friends. You're going to feel the anxiety. You're going to have all of the nervous thoughts, but admit to yourself that you just don't know it all yet. But still do it. So going about that run, I would park. What pace should I be going at? The only thing that I should be thinking is, am I comfortable? And is this something that I'm, like, willing myself to like? I don't want to come away from it being like, that was brutal, and I didn't hit a 5:45 pace, and my heart rate was through the roof. I just want to come away from it being like,
that was nice.
And, like, drop the expectation.
Yeah, really, truly, like, it is, it's a nice thing to do with friends as well.
You know? I love doing it with friends. Yeah. It's my new favorite way to socialize. Yeah. That also really helps you booze less. It's when you shift your friendships into activity.
Exactly. So I guess the final question is, did you have fun?
Yes, I did. I did have fun. Training block taught me so much. Really enjoyed the training block. Was so grateful to you and Finn. Like, I could never have done those 16 weeks without you. Even if I had just been given
a plan,
say I'd, like, downloaded a plan. There were so many things that happen as you go through those 16 weeks that you cannot plan for.
Yeah.
You might get, like, a little injury. You might have a question. You know, like, this came up and I have a question. Who are you going to ask? Having a coach was unreal. But that was just really a fun experience. And then the marathon itself, even though I didn't have many words on the day, and even though it was very overstimulating, I would say the reward of it, it is fun.
It is fun.
You're running, you're moving your body, it's good, in like, the endorphins are there. What's not to like?
And I guess we'll end on the crossroads question, because everyone who runs a marathon is at a crossroads, and people either go one of two ways. They're like, I'm never doing that again. Or they say, I'm never doing that again. And 2 weeks later, they sign up for an overnight 80K ultramarathon in Texas, Cassia. Which one are you? Or are we undecided?
We're slightly undecided. I think for me, my next goal is, like, I really like running now.
Yeah.
And like I say, the distance actually became really irrelevant. So now my goal is keep running for leisure.
Yeah.
I would love to improve my half marathon PB.
Yeah.
That'd be a cool goal.
10K?
10K PB. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd love to play around with that and see where my literal fitness can take me. Now that I know I can do distance. So listen, never say never to doing something again. It wasn't traumatic. But right now I just have different goals, I think.
Yeah.
And also, I'm tired.
I'm tired.
Girlfriend, I'm tired.
I know. It is. It's tiring, but it's so rewarding. And I'm just so glad you drank the Kool-Aid. And I didn't have a running friend, you see. Well, I've got plenty of running friends, but not like a best running friend. Mm-hmm. So I just created one.
Oh, you were like, open the gullet, I'm pouring it down. And I was like, yeah.
Rihanna would arrive at my house and every single time I'd have new gels or a new pair of shoes or a Garmin. I literally was just like, you are becoming me. I'm just like,
yeah, literally. But it can be fun.
It can be fun.
I'm so grateful that my life feels so much more like expansive yeah. now because of it.
Yeah. So ultramarathons next up. We'll see. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you liked this AMA. I'm going to try and do this every week next season, just so that we can have a little bit more interactivity, because I give all my ideas to you and I think it's always nice that I'm able to then just have a little bit of a chat after. So that's coming for season 3, along with loads of other cool things. So stay tuned. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Rihanna.
Thanks for having me. I love you.
I'm proud of you. And yeah, until next week, guys. Adios.
Bye.